right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. It is good to be here. I hope everybody's having a great day or morning or afternoon, evening, wherever you guys are in the world. You're in the right place because we are joined by Certiq. In fact, the VP of Marketing, Monier Jalal, who's coming at us today to talk all things crypto, blockchain. Monier, how are you doing today?
Doing great. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, we're excited. And I'm joined by my trusty compadre, Mr. Brendan Veman. Brendan, how are you doing today? Things going good on your side of the country?
Yeah, you know, we're holding it down over here on the East Coast. Things are doing well. Still good. Abnormally hot, but we're living in the great world of crypto. So it's hard to go wrong.
There's been a crazy heat wave. I was just at Disneyland and it was like, man, like 105 degrees. I was melting, but it was totally worth it. It was a ton of fun. Have you been there recently? Anybody? Disneyland? Monier?
I've been to Disneyland, not recently, but I sympathize with you because I know it's exhausting doing the whole round. And, you know, if it's in 105 heat or whatever, that's probably even worse.
Yeah, it was pretty out of control. But speaking of heat, I mean, there's been a lot of heat here in the crypto world recently as well. There was, feels like there's exploit after hack after this or that. And Certiq, your guys' job is protect against hacks to audit smart contracts. So let's get a deep dive here on Certiq and what are you guys all about and what's your mission?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. It's a little bit more expansion beyond auditing. You started out a while back doing auditing. 2018, and now things have obviously progressed beyond that. So in a nutshell, it is end-to-end security as it's demanded by the expansion of Web3. What I mean by that is just as we kind of evolve in Web3 and grow that ecosystem, we are leading the way and paving the way in discovering and launching new services. And we'll go into those services as well later on, but that's pretty much in a nutshell. We've been around since 2018. And if you go to our website, you'll see a lot of the products that we have on the product pages themselves. And then you can look at our just leaderboard itself and look at all the projects that we have. Thousands of projects that are from all walks of life, all segments of life, and from large to small. So, yeah.
Incredible. What does a smart contract audit look like?
Yeah, great question. So it starts off in the kind of life cycle with the project approaching us as early as even having an idea of what they're going to launch. And they may not be at a point ready, and we still have that conversation about what their intentions are. But eventually it evolves into really a smart contract of code and available to us to have a look at. And our job really is to look at the code itself, do the analysis, walk through the code, have our security experts take a look at that and discover vulnerabilities and issues in that. Now, our job is not to fix those issues. We're there to provide a recommendation and a report. And if you go to our leaderboard, you'll see the thousands of projects that are there, and you'll see project pages that have the reports there for the community to take a look and see what issues are flagged and what have been remediated, what's outstanding. So in that whole process, from start to finish, we give the project the ability to fix any issues that we find and recommendations how to fix those, to the point where eventually the report is released to the public for everybody to see. And that's available on our website.
And I'm curious, what are the main differences when it comes to cybersecurity between Web 2 and Web 3?
Yeah, that's a great question. When we talk about Web 2 security, we're more referring to security related to centralized issues, protection of centralized data or a website or an application, better centralized access controls for users. Web3 refers more to security around smart contracts and blockchains, specifically risk and vulnerability around code, and security insights around on-chain data. Suspicious. What I mean by on-chain data, I mean suspicious activity, transactions, fund movements. That's Web3. However, there's, you know, the so-called Web3 ecosystem is not made of purely Web3 building blocks. Web2 plays a big part in this. You know, you've got on-off ramps to oracles, wallets, exchanges, NFT marketplaces, and those bring Web2 security into consideration. So you have concerns on wallet access, privilege access issues on Discord servers. You've probably seen, you know, those being hacked and compromised through social networking attacks. And then you've got the exchanges themselves, which are driven out of applications or websites, and those fall prey to traditional Web2 application types of attacks. So it's not a demarc completely between Web3 and Web2. There is interconnects between Web3 and Web2 in a Web3 situation.
Have you felt like the hacks are evolving? Are they changing? You know, here we are in middle of 2023. You know, Certik has been around for a lot longer than that. How have things changed since you guys first got founded? And what year was that, by the way?
Yeah, it was 2018. Okay. I think the growth of crypto has seen, you know, new and emerging technologies, right, with the expansion of Web3. Ecosystem itself, and with the ecosystem evolution and new technologies comes increasing threat landscape, right? So hackers look for new ways to exploit. One good example of that is the technology that drives new attacks is that for cross-chain bridges. Cross-chain bridges act as interconnect hubs between different chains. They were prevalent when they launched, I'd say about a year or so ago, and accounted for a good amount of lost funds, only because the cross-chain bridge sits as an interconnect between multiple chains, making the exploit potential larger, right? So it really, the evolution of really hacks and exploits ties kind of closely to how the Web3 ecosystem and technologies introduced into the Web3 ecosystem evolves over time. So that's what we tend to see as we kind of look at this.
Yeah. You know, I'm curious, you know, I think a lot of people at home are thinking like, man, like, you know, crypto's got all sorts of different pitfalls and you don't know what you don't know. What are some of the key tools or best ways that the average consumer can kind of protect their crypto? Do you guys have any recommendations or best practices people at home could kind of follow?
Yeah, I think I like that you've put security as part of the tool sets. Yeah. And typically we don't see it there, but what we encourage folks to do is their research. And we recently launched Skynet for Community. And if you go take a look at that, you'll actually see there's a lot of information you need related to security and more on that site. So if you go to skynet.certic.com, you'll see a lot of the information. And there are tools all over the place, right? There are tools scattered everywhere. But it typically starts with the risk of the project. And you're trying to understand risk versus investment, and typically, right? And so you're going to look at the project itself, what level of risk is associated with that project. And for our case, when we put a security score around that, which ties to a lot of things, really the risk of the code, the sentiments of the project, the validity of the market for that token, and so on. And then we go into details, obviously, on that. So it's not just a snapshot of what that looks like. It's more details in terms of the risk itself and how we came up with that. But I would encourage folks to go out there who are community investors and start there. Start at a central point where they can look at that information and then make their decisions based off that.
And you've already partnered with some like pretty well-known big names in the industry. We're talking like Polygon, Tether, Sandbox. How are you currently helping them and just, I guess, providing that extra layer of security for both them, but also just additional transparency for their users and their audience base?
Yeah, great question. I mean, we typically partner across the board with folks that allow them to kind of publicize their credibility around security in a better way or build confidence. And through that entire process of auditing as well as providing services, we also then help co-market promote them or even flag them in our leaderboard to show that they've, you know, either gotten a high score or whatever score it is, and either they've got a leading badge of some sort that promotes them to be better out there. So those are things that kind of we do to highlight the situation with the project. And they do appreciate that from that perspective, because we do have a good founding marketing layer that allows to do that. A pretty big, large ecosystem around the marketing machine that does that for them. In terms of specific partnership, which are more strategic, you can go to our partner page, and there's a list of strategic partners there that we've signed up. And we pick partners carefully. It involves a better together strategy where we believe there's a longevity in providing security services with certain partnerships, at the same time expanding our presence and diversity across the ecosystems. Meaningful conversations with large chains, like you mentioned, Polygon, and leaders in the Web3 segments, Sandbox, whoever, right, makes sense as they allow long-term relationships for us. So from a strategic partnership, beyond just the general partnerships, we do have a list there and we pick those carefully.
Very cool. Yeah, I'm curious, you know, when your guys is... you know, the auditors, they go through, they maybe find a bug, they report it back to the foundation or the development team. Is that kind of how it works? And there's kind of just a back and forth between your guys' developers and their developers? Or is it kind of more of a platform or a program that a developer might sign up for and use the Certiq platform? Like, how does the actual process work?
Yeah, so just highlighting a bit more about the process, it is a point where the code is shared. It's on some repository somewhere, and we then start doing the analysis of that code. And we will go through there, and then we will highlight those issues at different severities, anywhere from informational to medium, to high to critical. And it's up to that project to then have the ability or be given the ability to go fix that. So we allow that time frame for the project to go through and fix those vulnerabilities. The entire process varies. Sometimes you get like, how long does an audit take? It kind of ties to the the analogy of like, how long is a piece of string, right? Or it depends on the amount of code that's there, the technology that is behind it, the language that the code is written in, on. And, you know, it depends, right?
Right.
But we can onboard within a couple of weeks and then we start the process. Once we get availability of the code, we go through, have our experts who look at the code. And then produce the report and then have the remediation happen. And then the final report goes out. Sometimes certain things don't get fixed. We highlight that in the report that's available for people to see that. And, you know, it could be, stuff that people are just deferring to later, which still is a risk. Or they decide, you know, from their perspective, the design doesn't warrant the fix, and they want to keep it as is. So again, we're not dictating that something should get changed, and we're not fixing stuff. We're just making recommendations. So and that's the entire process. And then beyond that, there's situations where there's continuous assessment where projects can come back to us and they have, you know, a change, an upgrade, a fork, smart contracts, and then we'll do another assessment of the code.
Yeah, and you guys have done this for, you know, over $360 billion in digital assets, roughly 4,000 clients. You guys have detected in this process you've just described over 60,000 vulnerabilities. And you guys have a 70% market share, which is pretty incredible. So it's like, you guys have definitely made a name for yourself. And that's really good to see. And I guess my question is, You know, how do you guys see your business developing so you could retain that awesome market share, so you could continue, you know, finding vulnerabilities? Are you guys going to be leveraging any certain new technologies or growing in any certain direction?
Yeah, I mean, I think it ties back to the evolution. As we build more Web3 ecosystem blocks, introduce new technology, we inevitably expand the attack surface for hackers.
Right.
That's a given, right? And with that, you can expect to see more security solutions to solve those problems as they arise. I think there's a lot to be said around, you know, stuff like fund tracing, mitigating or protecting measures to combat situations where funds are being drained. I think future, maybe identity management starts to come into the solution more. But it really is tied to what problem we're seeing and how we address it. And we've gone through a good amount of evolution from 2018 till now because of that. When we saw the need to, beyond auditing, we saw the need to do to look at on-chain data for tracking suspicious activity. And that was something that we went after and then launched Skynet itself for that. And then we noticed in early 2021, that rug pulls were becoming more prevalent. And then obviously realizing that the human security issue of trust is a problem. And we launched KYC for that reason. And then, you know, somewhere along the line, Web 2 is part of the picture. We're also doubling down on pen testing for wallets and, you know, exchanges and websites. And that became a thing, right? A need for that. And then we wanted to expand beyond that for more findings beyond the findings that we have in launching our bug bounty program or platform and bringing in ethical hackers to cover that as well. And we'll keep going like this. We'll still keep going, looking at innovations and looking at new problems on the horizon and how to go after that. Our mantra is simply this: it's securing the Web3 world. It is end-to-end security. It is not a point solution just for auditing. There's plenty of auditors out there. We're not about that. We're about the end-to-end journey from start to finish. And there's lots of pieces that make up that end-to-end journey and lots of security solutions that need to be there to address that. And that's what Certiq's all about.
And that kind of raises a question for me, because this year we've seen AI really come to the forefront of crypto. Anything that even has the word AI in it or attached to it kind of just went ballistic at the beginning of this year. And we kind of saw the whole crypto industry grasping for straws, trying to figure out how they can really incorporate artificial intelligence in all these different ways. But where I'm curious is, where do you think artificial intelligence can specifically help the security side of things? Like, how can we use AI to help further security in crypto?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. There's been a lot of push and change and happenings going on with AI. I'm surprised daily to see new scenarios being covered by AI and looking for the future of what that's going to hold, right? I think there's a number of interesting scenarios for AI where security is concerned and playing really a supplement to security, not a replacement to current security processes. AI bots could be used, for example, to monitor transactions in real time, identify suspicious patterns, and even intervene to prevent fraudulent activities. Again, false positives could be a problem with that, right? These are algorithms, and AI is problematic sometimes based on the amount of data it has. So that's what I mean by supplement, not replace. So the reality could be that these would be recommendations with humans making the final decision. We're seeing a lot of trends now with AI in kinds of day-to-day scenarios where security was kind of thought about with ChatGPT in mind. I gave a talk last not last year. It feels kind of too far back, but just this year, early this year, where I talked about, ChatGPT being used to audit a project. In actual fact, that a project came to us and said, hey, before I go ahead and, ask you to audit, ChatGPT has audited. And we kind of took a look at it. And the reality of the situation is really that where it's a very simplistic, coarse-grained, issue, ChatGPT does a good job. It will find it. And again, depending on like how much data it has, that the false positives on that could vary, right? Mm-hmm. But what we did find is there was a good amount of findings that just couldn't work out. It just couldn't detect. It couldn't, you know, come up with it. And this is the difference. And this is why I say it's a supplement, not a replacement. And in those situations where you still have a gap on complex issues that ChatGPT can't find, the human, the experienced human is still required, right? And so you've got verification, which is absolutely needed for something that's AI driven. And then you've got the most complex issues that you can't have AI find. And it is similar to the analogy I give, and I gave in my talk, which was if you take a baseball and a piece of cheese and you show AI and say, what are these? It'll say, oh, yeah, that's a baseball. That's a piece of cheese. But if you take AI, you know, two pieces of cheese, one is cheddar and one is Swiss, and you say, what are these? It'll say just cheese. Mm. It doesn't know the difference. It really doesn't have that level of complex expertise to know the difference. And that's where the risk, lies, right? And so, yeah, I mean, the ChatGPT, the movement of AI, all this is sparking interest and scenarios for security. And I think there is a good place for AI with the level of guidance and management around AI. But in all respect, is not a replacement. It's a supplement for the solution.
Yeah, no, I think that's really good stuff. Pretty spot on. And I'm curious, do you think that every sort of crypto project, or like, you know, just in terms of the future of KYC, will everything have to have KYC, or will there be, you know, in your opinion, a kind of a bifurcation?
Yeah, it's a great question. Unfortunately, KYC is not a widely adopted mechanism in industry. For addressing human risk. I mean, generally speaking, projects that want to promote trust to their community will adopt to do KYC. And we actually incentivize in the process through KYC by allowing projects to acquire badges. In actual fact, our KYC program allows for gold, silver, bronze badge, depending on how much KYC level you've gone through and how much you've achieved.
Oh, nice.
And CERTIC also has the obligation to push a project to KYC if it suspects high risk during the sign-on process. But still, projects can go and go elsewhere and then go get their auditing done elsewhere and bypass KYC. Even though CERTIC has a very rigorous KYC process, we actually still see interesting scenarios around proxy KYC actors where paid actors are masquerading the true owners. And we detect those, but I certainly would like to see all security providers adopt KYC process, but we're not there yet. Absolutely.
Very interesting. Has it ever occurred that a project kind of came in and you guys discovered a vulnerability, you disclosed it, and then you find out in the news a few weeks later or whatever that they apparently didn't pay attention to that or didn't address it and they end up getting hacked?
Yeah, so that kind of doubles down on this comment I made around we're a company that provides reports and recommendations. Finally, it's up to the project to make that choice to fix something or not. I think centralization issues are more prevalent out there. And we've actually recently, in the last couple of weeks, we've launched our kind of centralization front and center features where we're now highlighting centralization more in terms of making sure that people can see that there are issues. But there's been situations where both issues are being flagged but not addressed, which results in a hack. Or there is more interesting issues where beyond the scope of what we've audited, meaning this is the code, we've audited this, but there's other code that we haven't audited, which is out of scope, which gets hacked. And so that is also an important statement where it's vital that you go into the project page and look at the report and understand the scope of the audit, what was audited, what issues were flagged.
Totally.
But yes, answer your question. We do get those scenarios where either A, the issues was not fixed, or B, it's out of scope and that results in a hack.
You know, without giving any names, have you ever had a project come to you and ask for a partnership or for help or to work with you only to realize that something a bit more chaotic or wild was happening behind the scenes that you weren't originally informed about?
I don't think so. I think at the end of the day, it's the scope of the project and what they cover with us. And we can only know what we see and what we audit. The best example really is a situation where there is truly scamming going on. And this is where KYC does help. And if we can't push a KYC because there is no ability to do that with the project, then that increases the risk. And so, yeah, there are situations where I can't name names, but where, you know, because KYC wasn't done, something else happens later and a rug pull happens.
Do you think that there's like inherent flaws in Solidity, which is the language of Ethereum? Like, is there inherent flaws that make its attack surface area just so large and all these vulnerabilities, or, you know, is there a better?
I don't know if that, I mean, Rust versus Solidity. I think it comes down to the developer secure coding at the end of the day. I think it's, in my philosophy, yeah, I keep saying this, like it's the redheaded stepchild. Security is just not a thing that's sexy, right? It's always left behind. But really secure coding employs that you code securely early. And the whole process for that involves starting early, having the right security folks in there, looking at architectures to model attacks on your code, and find these vulnerabilities early. And it's just best practices and secure coding at the end of the day. And I think, you know, you got developers who are trying to get out there as quick as they can with their next, you know, big thing, right? And it's just, I think, principles and best practices to make sure that whatever language you're programming in, that you're following secure best practices and coding the right way, and not shortcutting just to get out the door, because the impact of finding the vulnerability early, is far less than if it was found after mainnet launch and the thing is out the door, right? It's just way different.
Well, shoot, Monier, this was incredible. Get all your insights. One last kind of question before we let you go is just really, you know, taking the perspective of a person who just kind of entered the crypto market. What's one word of advice, one word of wisdom that you, a veteran, can give to somebody who's just entering, you know, how to protect yourself from some of these crypto scams, how to check and verify that something might be legit? Is there any, like, you know, tips or tricks you could leave us all with?
Yeah, I think integrate security data as part of your own investment research. There are lots of great tools out there, but they're scattered everywhere, and some of them are incomplete. I think, you know, this is why we launched Skynet for Community, to allow community investors everything they need to help make their decisions. And, you know, if you centralize things and have all that information at their disposal and available, then making those decisions becomes easier. But I would say always in your investigation and research of what to invest in, integrate security as part of that whole process. That's, you know, the short answer of it.
Yeah, love it. Well, good stuff. Thank you so much for joining us. And if everybody wants to follow you guys on Twitter or maybe hop in the Discord, what channels can we point them to?
Yeah, you can just go to Twitter and Certic, and then Certic Community for Discord. You'll find us there.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us today. And for everybody at home watching, I hope you enjoyed and talk to you guys soon.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.